friends. Dennis Prager here, and this is what we call on the show a history hour, because if you don't know what happened before, then you don't understand what's happening now. I think it's the most important subject that people can study to understand the world in which we live, and that's the reason for the dedication of these times and shows to some great work of history. As I consider this book, Moment of Battle, The 20 Clashes That Changed the World. Yep, war changes the world, indeed. The author is James Lacy. He's published quite a number of books. He's a defense analyst. He's written for Time, National Review, Foreign Affairs. He teaches at the Marine Corps War College. James Lacy, welcome to the Dennis Prager Show.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much. Was it hard to choose the 20? I mean, you had to disqualify another 20 at least.
We actually considered it, putting it at the end of the book, but talked ourselves out of it, a list of another 100 battles to explain why we didn't put them in there.
You shouldn't have talked yourselves out of it. By the way, it is multiple. It's James Lacy and Williamson Murray. So I just want people to understand that James Lacy is not talking in the royal we.
Okay. Oh, true enough. Thank you. We sat down. We had a pretty strict criteria, which we tried to maintain the entire time with reasonable success, I think, that we were looking for battles that have created the world we live in, that we still feel the effects of those battles today. Human society still feels the effects of those battles today.
Oh, that was one of the criteria.
Right. So,
wow.
And I think that's the biggest of the criteria. Now, within there, you could have a lot of disagreement and a lot of argument. And as I look over the reviews that have come in, mostly, you know, from individuals, it's, you know, if you look at Amazon, we usually lose 1 star or 2 stars because it says, this is a great book, great, well-written book, easy to read. I sat through it in one sitting. I can't believe it doesn't have the Battle of Manzikert.
That's right. The book deserves 5 stars, but it didn't have my battle, so I'm giving it no stars.
Yeah, that's right. And I told the publisher that would happen, and the publisher said, no, that people don't do that. They'll just judge the book. I said, you just don't know historians, professional or amateur. If their favorite battle isn't on my list or on the list of
then forget it. Then you're disqualified.
I'm too dumb to know it's important, or I may not have heard of it.
But, now, let me just, before getting into individual wars or battles, if you will, I guess they are battles in the midst of given war. I don't know if people quite appreciate, and you might want to reflect on this, I don't think anything has changed history more than war.
I think we agree on that. I mean, that's basically what we start the introduction with. There's a massive school of historians, and there's some validity to their argument, but they've really pushed the field of history into some areas that they shouldn't have gone in. The Annales school.
The what school? I'm sorry?
The Annales, A-N-N-A-L-E-S. And some of the history these guys have written is absolutely brilliant. It does set a gigantic context for the great flows of history. And I always enjoy reading it. But to a great degree, they have decided that individual wars or individual battles or even, you know, individual people have no great effect or have, in some cases, they say have no effect on the
world. Oh, well, that's just absurd. I'm sorry. I hate to call it that because I'm sure they're bright. But just to give something that people do know about, I don't believe that without a Hitler, I don't think there would have been a Holocaust. Just to give an example of what one person can do.
Yeah, could another person just as evil have stepped up? And some of that is the historical time and the thing, because, you know, at the same time, you have Hitler starting the war and massacring tens of millions of people. You have Stalin, literally one country over, only Poland intervening, killing 25 million of his own
That's
people,
right.
Most of them by starvation.
Yes.
And less than a generation later, you have a guy in China, Mao, doing the exact
60
same
million.
Thing. Yes. Yeah. So, there's something to say for the big scheme of history, but to say that an individual, or for better or worse, has no effect.
No. Okay, we won't even go there because it's absurd. All right, so let's talk about some of your battles.
Okay.
And you don't have to have an answer to this, but if you were to choose one to begin with to explain how a war or a battle that happened well before we were born has affected us, which of your 20 would you immediately choose?
I mean, I always go back to the first one, the Battle of Marathon. 10,000 Athenians against probably the fewest number is probably 30,000 Persians, and could be up to double that. And they won. They won a tremendous victory. The Persians came back 10 years later and tried again. But the confidence that the Greeks got from the Battle of Marathon was decisive in them fighting off the Persians 10 years later when Xerxes arrived. If the Greeks had lost at Marathon, there would be no Western civilization. The only place the ideas of democracy, free and open markets, most of what we take for granted in Western civilization would have been snuffed out by a tyrannical Persian Empire 2,500 years ago. There is a number of historians who say, well, wait a minute, Socrates would have been born anyway, and Plato and Aristotle and the great playwrights would have all been born, Greek playwrights would have all been born. I said, yeah, but they would not have accomplished much under a tyrannical despotic empire. They needed the environment of a free and open Greek polis to reach their...
How did they win at Marathon?
It's actually one of the most amazing feats of all time. They charged 10,000. This is what Victor Davis Hanson calls the beginning of the Western way of war, which historians love to fight about whether it exists or not. The Persians were probably moving, so some of their troops were on ship, and the Athenians couldn't let them get on ships, and they could descend on Greece at any point they wanted. So they had to attack. They were waiting for the Spartans to arrive, and the Spartans were marching hard to their rescue. They actually arrived early the next morning after the battle, but they didn't have the time or the luxury to wait. So 10,000 Athenians lined shield to shield, abreast, charged into what was probably 30,000 Persian infantry. A lot of debate on whether Persian cavalry was there. And broke the Persian line. It was the beginning of a long series of victories of heavily armed, armored Greek soldiers against light.
Were they similarly armored, the two sides?
No, the Persians were a very warlike race, but most of their battles were against Scythian nomads or on the open plains of Anatolia and the Asian steppes. So they didn't have heavily armored infantry. And they never came up with a solution to create such infantry. The closest they could come was hiring Greek mercenaries. So when the phalanx actually got through the arrow storm, they had a lot of archers, and smashed into the Persian front line, it was wooden shields encased in iron with metal encased soldiers hitting guys wearing nothing but their tunics and wicker shields.
So I thought there was a trick here to their victory when you're outnumbered 3-1 and you don't exactly have artillery. So why did Persia even invade Greece? Simply because it was there?
I guess, we're never going to come to we have the answer that Herodotus left us. The Greeks were already on what we would call the west coast of Turkey, Ionia, the Anatolian mainland. There was a series of Greek cities already there, almost all of them colonies or former colonies or attached to Athens in some way. And Persia, the Persian Empire, is sweeping westward, conquered all of those cities before they hit the Aegean. Those cities revolted. The Great Ionian Revolt took the Persians 5 years to crush it, but Athens sent a lot of help. Small army, money, a lot of moral support. And the Darius, the Persian emperor, supposedly had one of his men remind him every day, don't forget what the Athenians did to us.
Okay, hold on there. All right, we're talking about the book Moment of Battle, The 20 Clashes That Changed the World. And they did change the world. That's the whole point. That's the reason for the whole History Hour idea. We'll alternate modern, medieval, and ancient. I'm speaking to James Lacy. The book Moment of Battle is up at DennisPrager.com. Everybody, Dennis Prager here, and this is one of the periodic history hours that we have on the show, because the more you know about history, the more you know about the present. It is as simple as that, and there are some terrific historians writing these days. One of them is James Lacy, and he and his co-author have written Moment of Battle, The 20 Clashes That Changed the World, and he makes a very good argument for these 20 specific battles. He teaches at the Marine Corps War College. We were talking about the one that saved Western civilization. It took place in 490 BC. That's Greece defeating, or the Athenians defeating the Persians. All right, so let's move on in time here. And you'll give me a one-paragraph synopsis, and then we'll stop at a few for greater detail. The next one you have is Alexander the Great creates a new world, 311 BC, Gaugamela. What's that?
Gaugamela. In most of the books written prior to this generation, it was usually called Arabella for some reason. Well, I know the reason, but it was Napoleon. It was Alexander's greatest battle, greatest victory, and it finally crushed the Persian Empire. He may have been outnumbered as much as 10 to 1, significantly outnumbered. Once again, the Persians did not come up with an answer to the phalanx of solid cased heavy infantry coming at them. And Alexander had added something new to the thing.
Where did this take place?
North Iraq in the Kirkuk region.
What we would call northern Iraq today.
Yes.
Did the Greeks ever go as far as Persia?
Yes, they conquered all of Persia. Alexander, after this battle, marched across Persia, now Iran, finally ending his campaigns inside of northern India or Pakistan. His last battle was on the Indus River. After that, his troops said, "That's it, we're not conquering anymore, let's go home."
Did he conquer the most in history, or was that Genghis Khan?
In terms of square miles, population, I think Genghis Khan has to hold the record, and the Khan followers that came after him, marching all the way from the Pacific, Mongolia, China, into Central Europe, at least as far as the Hungarian plain. I've always been one of those historians who said that's about as far as he could have gotten. The big thing has always been Genghis Khan. We got lucky that the Khan died and their armies returned, or they'd have just swept across Western Europe. Most people think of the Mongol horde was some massive force. It probably was less than 200,000 troops, and they were about to run out of places to feed their horses. The Hungarian plain is the last place where you could feed that many horses in one spot. And they're about to run into countries where there's a castle every 10 yards, just about, with 12 knights in each castle fighting to the death. They would have run out of Mongols before they got halfway across Germany. It's one of the great what-ifs of history. No, for sure.
All right, so that's Alexander. Next one you have, Zama in 202 BC. What's that?
Zama was the final battle of the Second Punic War. Creces first...
Tell us what the Punic Wars were.
Okay, yeah. The wars that decided who was going to be the great power of the Roman, of the Mediterranean, between Rome and Carthage. They fought three wars, first two bloody, long, hard fights. The second of those wars was the biggest, probably the biggest, longest, the most hard fought, and that's where you have the famous Hannibal, who actually marched up and down the good portion of the Italian peninsula for 16 years until Rome finally found a general who can match him. But that was Scipio, and Scipio is probably a lowly ranking officer of the Roman army at three of Hannibal's greatest victories and Roman defeats. So he learned a lot at the foot of the master there. And then he went to Spain, took Spain f- from the Carthaginians, put into the Roman camp with all the troops they could recruit.
What was the ethnicity of the Carthaginians? That's Tunisia, right?
It is Tunisia. Carthaginians typically did not fight themselves. I mean, there was typical Carthaginian offices, Carthaginian leadership, but their armies were mostly mercenary armies. I would say by the time Hannibal left Italy to return to North Africa to fight the Battle of Zama, virtually none of his army was Carthaginian. As a matter of fact, it was notable in Livy and Polybius, the two Roman historians.
So who was trying to take over who? Carthage Rome or Rome Carthage?
That's a good question. This is the two great powers of the ancient world running into each other. One might say it was inevitable. Only one could survive. Rome was probably the more expansionary power. It took Sicily away from Carthage in the First Punic War. Carthage then started expanding its empire in Spain. Hannibal, his father was a Carthaginian general. The story goes that he took Hamilcar, Hannibal's father, took his three sons and made them swear at an altar to always be mortal enemies of Rome.
When one defeated the other, did they take prisoners or just kill everybody, or was it slavery or death? Was that what it was?
It's a much more brutal age.
Yes,
it wasn't always brutal. After the Battle of Zama, Scipio probably had killed 20,000, captured 20,000. Now a certain portion then was probably slaves, but he was very lenient on Carthage. You know, they forced him to give a lot of money, but that was basically it. Now, in the Third Punic War, now a generation later, when Carthage was beginning to recoup its power, when the Romans finally broke through the gates, they killed every male above the age of 13 and 14, sold all the women and children into slavery, razed the walls, wrecked every building, and then planted salt in the ground so nothing could ever grow there. And that's why we have the term today, a Carthaginian peace. When you went to war against Rome, you were making a serious bet about your future.
They were particularly brutal.
You know, it was a brutal age, and they didn't have the laws or the ethics. You know, it's hard to apply our ethical stances to them. But the Romans were brutal even for the period. I mean, even at the end of a Roman battlefield would horrify even their enemies. The Romans would go around eviscerating the bodies and throwing intestines around. Trying to understand the Romans on their own terms, I think, is about as difficult for us as if we tried to understand aliens landed on the planet tomorrow. They were different. I mean, the Romans is one of the few societies that were able to look at their enemy as prey. They didn't see them as human beings. When you read about Roman battles and the viciousness and how Rome kept coming at them, no matter how, even if they're defeated, they kept coming. And for a civilized society, it's absolutely incredible how vicious and bloodthirsty the Romans are on numerous occasions.
Well, these are some of the insights you get from Moment of Battle. We're talking about the 20 great battles that changed the world on this History Hour on the Dennis Prager Show, which I periodically broadcast, because if you know history, you know the present. You don't know history, you can't understand the present. Moment of Battle by James Lacy and Williamson Murray. James Lacy, my guest, book up at DennisPrager.com. Dennis Prager here, this History Hour. Periodically, we do this on some new book on history because it's so important to know what's happened in the world, and it's a great learning experience for me, too. Moment of Battle, the 20 Clashes That Changed the World. James Lacy, one of the two authors, is on with me. He teaches at the Marine Corps War College. We were talking about the Romans and the way they did battle and how horrible it was. So if you were male, you were just killed. And if you were a 13-year-old child or younger or a female, you were sent into slavery. I would assume that a lot of women committed suicide rather than be captured by the Romans. Do you have any idea if that's true?
I don't know. I've read a lot of Roman history, and it's never come up as a topic.
The reason I raise it is that this is what are you familiar with with Masada, Masada?
Yes.
Because the Jews there held off the Romans for a certain period of time, right. And then they all killed themselves rather than be captured by the Romans.
This when you read in the ancient history, this seems like a particularly Jewish thing to do. No slight intended on by any means. I mean, the greatest Jewish historian we have of that period, Josephus, was a commander fighting the Romans, and his force got trapped, and they all committed suicide too, except Josephus. I think maybe one other that was supposed to kill each other. I forget the exact thing. This would happen often, but you know, Masada is one of those battles that isn't understood today. It had a different meaning during the Roman era. The Romans planted an entire legion. You know, they only had 30 of those on average. To put an entire legion in the middle of nowhere to kill 150 people. Masada is looked at today as one of these great heroic stands, sort of like the Alamo. At the time, it told the rest of the ancient world that if you offended Rome, they would send whatever troops were necessary and take whatever time, over a year, getting up there to kill you. This was a public announcement from the Roman Empire to the rest of the world. If you offend us, if you rebel, there is nothing we won't do to kill you. And that's how the rest of the world recognized it. That's why there were so few revolts against Rome up until the very the very end.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. All right, let's go on with it to the next battle.
Right.
In the year 9, the Teutoburger Wald. Wald is a forest. So what is the Teutoburger Wald?
This is the battle that stopped Rome. The three legions wiped out in the middle of the German forest. Rome had fought it to pacify Germany, and it was beginning the process of assimilating it into the Roman Empire when a great rebellion broke out, caught the Romans totally by surprise. Three of their 30 legions were annihilated almost to a man.
Germanic tribes.
By Germanic tribes. Now, Rome came back and punished the Germans. It's famous for, schoolboy history. Augustus walked around for weeks unshaven without getting his hair cut, periodically yelling, Varsus, Varsus, the Roman commander, give me back my legions. Made quite an impact. It was the first great Roman army lost in a long time. Carrhae with Crassus against the Parthians was the last one prior to that, and that was two or more generations earlier. Rome looked at Germany and said, there's no serious agriculture there, there's no industry, there's no great trade routes, we're just going to stop here on the Rhine River and on the Danube, and that's it. Periodically Rome would send troops in to punish the Germans, but it created, because Rome stopped on the Rhine and the Danube, the Teuton Latin divide that still separates Europe. The Germanic nations on one side and the Latin Romance nations, Spain, France.
Well, what about Roman Britain? That means that they did go west of the Rhine.
Well, that's in the northwest.
Okay, so that doesn't count because it's not on the continent.
Yeah. Well,
okay, that's fine. That's fine. I just wanted to understand.
Not west of the Rhine. I'm sorry, east of the Rhine. They marched, France is west of the Rhine. Did I say?
Yes. No. I understand. I'm just saying there was one country that was Romanized, as far as I know,
and
that was Britain. So, but that's the north, and it's not on the continent. So this is the division of the continent, Teuton and Roman. Gotcha. All right, we're going to continue. It's a tremendous lesson in history. I'm just trying to soak in every name and every date here. Moment of Battle, the 20 Clashes That Changed the World, the History Hour, Dennis Prager with James Lacey, author of Moment of Battle. Dennis Prager here, and this is one of our History Hours. Moment of Battle, the 20 Clashes That Changed the World is the name of the book. James Lacey, one of the authors. He teaches at the Marine Corps War College. And it's a terrific, terrific read. And one of the guarantees that it is, believe it or not, because I know the publishing world, is that it's published by Bantam. And they're not interested in history. They're interested in bestsellers. So if Banta publishes a book on history, it means it's very readable, which it is. Now we go to the next. I'm going in order here, as many as I can, but since so many people don't know about the ancient world, we started there, as you did. All right, so now the end of Rome, the year 378, the Battle of Adrianople. Tell us about that.
Adrianople. This is the battle. This one caused us a lot of trouble, as me and my co-author, William Sumeri, talked about it. There's been some serious history recently that this battle may not have been as important as all previous historians thought it was. But I think a lot of that is revisionist. We only have really one great source from the time. And once you say, hey, we only have one source, but we're going to discount them, you have to admit that we know absolutely nothing. So Adrianople is the first time in a long time that a Roman army is completely wiped out by a barbarian force inside the Roman Empire. This is marked as the beginning of the end of the Romans. I mean, the Roman Empire went to almost another 100 years, but from now on, they're on the defensive. The barbarians are coming across in greater and greater numbers over the Danube and the Rhine River.
By barbarians, do we mean primarily Germanic tribes?
Yes. There was some, I don't know if the Huns would be considered a Germanic tribe, but for the most part, off the steppes of Central Europe or Germanic tribes.
Right. And by the way, I don't know if you would know this, but did they treat the Romans the way Romans would treat those that they defeated?
For about two generations, they would say that this was not a conqueror, it was an assimilation, that this was a transition. That somehow the end of Rome and the beginning of the Dark Ages was made to look like a peaceful transition by tons of historians. And only recently did guys like Peter Hever and Chris Wickham and Ward Perkins start saying, wait a minute, you can't just make up the history. We went from a glorified thing to, the glories of Rome to, the Dark Ages weren't named the Dark Ages for nothing. Some remnants of civilization existed, where populations were cut in half, literally decreased almost to nil. It was a barbaric time. Barbarians killed when they had to. They looted, they wrecked cities and stuff like that. But they also, to a certain degree, even in the early years, and especially in the early years, didn't want to wreck the Roman Empire. They wanted what the Romans had. They were coming in and trying to set, and that's our farmland now. So there was never, until the end, the idea of just destroying the Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted. Okay. They wanted.
By the way, where is Adrianople?
I always look at it on ancient maps. So in the Bulgaria.
Okay, fine. The Balkans. Okay.
The Balkans.
All right. Now, critical. 636. The Islamic conquest begins at Yarmouk. Where's Yarmouk? What happens?
Yarmouk is in, for lack of a better term, Palestine, one of the great forgotten battles of history. If the Muslims, had come out of the Arabian Desert 10 years before or 10 years after they did, they would have been massacred. If there was a Muslim faith, it would be centered in one specific area of the Arabian Peninsula and probably not gone much further than that. Some could say, they may have expanded into Iran. But Rome, Byzantium, the new Rome, and Iran had fought a bloody war for over a generation. They were weak. They were trying to recover peace. They just fought themselves out, it was a peace for exhaustion. And one of the great plagues in history, and there's a great book on it, Justinian's Flea, had wrecked that entire area. As much as a third, maybe a half of the population was killed. And they had not even begun to recover.
So this is like the first black plague in Europe.
There have been other great plagues, but this would be, this in its devastation would be equal or greater than the black plague. And the Persian Empire, the Sassanids, Byzantines were not even at the beginning phases of recovery, one from their long war with each other, and two, the effects of this plague, when the Muslims, the armies of Islam, marched out. If they had come 10 years earlier, Iran and Persia and Byzantium would have been much stronger. If they came 10 years later when both countries had had time to recover, they'd have been much stronger. They wouldn't have had a chance.
Well, it was Allah's will.
It was somebody's will. but it was a vicious battle. I think the chapter's well done based on what we know. But the historians still fight on whether the battle lasted one day or 6 days. So it was a very difficult story to put together based on the knowledge we have.
Right.
But it's a battle that should not be forgotten.
Then the famous 1066 is your next battle, the remaking of Europe at Hastings. What happens there?
Well, the Anglo-Saxons were conquered after a long, hard fight. By William the Conqueror of Normandy, Duke of Normandy. Descendant from Vikings, it ended the Anglo-Saxon rule that had lasted since the fall of Rome on English soil, and put on top of that a French nobility still speaking French 150 years later during the Hundred Years' War when they're fighting France. What it did for the world in terms of changing outlooks was England, Anglo-Saxon England, was a very insular, inward-looking country. From this point on, England was looking outside. William had as much territory in France as he did in England, or close to it. So it changed. Instead of England always looking in on itself, it created an outlook in England that had it.
That is very important, to say the least. Back in a moment, the book, Moment of Battle. I'm Dennis Prager. Dennis Prager here, final segment of this edition of A History Hour, periodically broadcast on the show because of the importance I attach, and I think every thinking person does, to history. One good way of understanding how we got here is to understand the battles that brought us to where we are. And this well-written book, Moment of Battle, does that. The 20 Clashes That Changed the World, James Lacy and Williamson Murray. James Lacy is at the Marine Corps War College, and he's been my guest here, and we're getting a synopsis. So the end, we're up to 1066. Obviously, we're not going to get to 2003 and the drive for Baghdad, but I intentionally chose battles that people don't realize or don't know anything about, perhaps, that changed the world and made it to what we were. I mean, it's particularly dramatic if you're right about it. If it would have been 10 years earlier or 10 years later, how there wouldn't have been an Islamic conquest. It's just, to the extent that it is true, it is quite amazing. We're up at 1066, so the Anglo-Saxon rule is overcome. Is it fair to say by French rule? Is there such a thing as France then?
That's tough. Yeah, there's a glimmer of the idea of France. There is a king of France, but he wasn't as powerful as many of his dukes and, dukes of Burgundy.
All right, so what ethnicity, if you will, or what nationality takes over Britain in 1066?
Normans. It's Normans or Vikings. They had a large contingent.
So they're not French, they're Vikings.
No, they've been.
They're Frenchified Vikings.
Frenchified.
All right, that's fine. No. I understand. I'm trying to do it in modern terms, and it's not always easy.
William paid a lot of money for a lot of mercenaries and feudal lords. So they had a lot of troops from Britain, a lot of troops from other provinces of France, Maine. I mean, this was the great conquest. It was do or die. If you win, you got lots of lands and.
All right. Well, we'll end with something everybody heard of, but they probably couldn't explain. The Spanish Armada, 1588. We wait 500 years for the next great battle. Who fights? Who wins? Why is it important?
England, Spain. Since Columbus, Spain had been on top of the world due to all the silver. Some gold, mostly silver, coming out of the mines of Central and South America. Their armies were almost unbeatable. They were, because it was part of the Habsburg Empire, which stretched from, Austria through Germany. And then.
And who's the hero of this battle?
Uh, I guess there'd be several heroes, some of the British captains, Sir Walter Raleigh, Martin
Yes,
Forbisher.
That's it. People know the names. Well, listen, if people are, if we whetted their appetite for more, we've succeeded. Thank you, James Lacy. Okay. It's just been a joy to talk to you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. The book, Moment of Battle, The 20 Clashes That Changed the World, a History Hour on The Dennis Prager Show.